As a child in Minnesota, I developed a routine of looking for Lake Superior agates every time I went out walking along a dirt road. Gravel pits were another great place to find agates, and I collected pockets full even in places that were picked over by others. This habit and skill was easily transferred to finding dropped coins, and I would go out early in the morning after a ball game and crisscross the parking lot at Parade Stadium to pick up what others had lost. I am, it seems, a bit of a magpie. Or a crow, perhaps even like the Gollum. Precious, my precious! I am attracted to shiny things. So when I'm out walking, I find pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, even paper money. I once found a $100 bill on a playing field, and I picked them up. This is a lucrative habit, although not in a financially significant way. But it is a talent in the sense of a gift or skill that amazed a Chicago homeless man who I sometimes conversed with while we walked together. I can spot an old brown penny in the dirt on a dimly lighted street while walking along fully engaged in conversation, stoop down and pick it up with only a brief break in stride. I have even found a tuppence in a muddy cow path of a Scottish Highland meadow. I was gonna bring it in to show you, but ironically, I can't find it at the moment. I thought I'd take a picture of it and show it up there on the screen. Believe me, in that Scottish Highland meadow, I wasn't looking for lost coins. I was avoiding other things. So for me, finding pennies in the dark is similar to looking for the silver lining in unpleasant or unfortunate circumstances. It suggests the payoff, which even when as small and insignificant as a penny, adds up over time. Right, Lori? I have a little mantra that goes with my habit of picking up pennies in the dark. The inherent worth and dignity of every penny. All of us can develop an eye for the patterns, shape, size, color, in the case of pennies, to look for. However, as Erica Zhong said, everyone has a talent. What is rare is the courage to follow the talent into the dark place where it leads. A talent, then, is a gift that involves risk. Sometimes, though, we bump into the dark place that our talent leads when we have been doing something with so much focus and intensity that the actions and feelings follow us into our sleep and come through as nightmares, or at least disturbing exaggerations of what we have been doing. A bit like Robert Frost's apple picker, who says, "But I was well upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take, for I have had too much of apple picking. I'm overtired of the great harvest I myself desired." This is the shadow side to everything. It is also true that we do not appreciate the light without knowing the dark. We fail to taste the sweetness of joy if we never experience sorrow. With this in mind, I flip the penny over and consider how we can heal ourselves by meeting the shadow side face to face. In a meditation on autumn from his book, Let Your Life Speak, Parker Palmer reflects on how losses that felt irredeemable forced him to discern meanings he needed to know. How while on the surface it seemed that life was lessening, but silently and lavishly the seeds of new life were always being sown. He says, This hopeful notion that living is hidden within dying is surely enhanced by the visual glories of autumn. It is autumn's paradox of dying and seeding that one can imagine as we move through this season of the year. But today, with Halloween behind us, our clocks turned back to standard time, and the dark of night coming earlier each day as we move closer to winter's chill, my focus is on the reality that there is light and dark in everything. Every person, every experience has a shadow side. Beginning with the words of Thomas Merton, "There is in all visible things a hidden wholeness." Parker continues, "In the visible world of nature, a great truth is concealed in plain sight. Diminishment and beauty, darkness and light, death and life are not opposites. They are held together in a paradox of hidden wholeness. In a paradox, opposites do not negate each other. They cohere in mysterious unity at the heart of reality. Deeper still, they need each other for health, as my body needs to breathe in as well as breathe out. But in a culture that prefers the ease of either-or thinking to the complexities of paradox, we have a hard time holding opposites together. We want light without darkness, the glories of spring and summer without the demands of autumn and winter. The Faustian bargains we make fail to sustain our lives. When we so fear the dark that we demand light around the clock, there can be only one result: artificial light that is glaring and graceless, and beyond its borders a darkness that grows ever more terrifying as we try to hold it off. Split off from each other, neither darkness nor light is fit for human habitation. But if we allow the paradox of darkness and light to be, the two will conspire to bring wholeness and health to every living thing." End quote. Let me share with you some illustrations of how this paradox conspires to bring wholeness and health to our lives. I begin with the example of a woman I met while I served as a chaplain intern on the infusion therapy unit at the University of Chicago Medical Center. She had been diagnosed with late-stage esophageal cancer and told me the day of her first chemotherapy treatment that she was determined to call attention to this particular form of cancer and the need for early testing and detection. "There is," she said, "no reason for this cancer to be the silent killer that it has been." She told me that she wanted to use her experience to educate others. She chose the creative tension of her illness to give herself a voice and to be life-affirming. Her efforts will improve others' chances of survival. Her activism is courageous and healing for herself and others. By the way, she is an excellent example of Palmer's fourth habit of the heart generating a sense of personal voice and agency, which I have preached on in other places. The late Unitarian Universalist minister, Reverend Dr. Forrest Church, wrote in his book Love and Death, My Journey Through the Valley of the Shadow, about the lessons he learned while living, loving, and dying of cancer. His mantra was, "Want what you have, do what you can, be who you are." He unpacks his mantra in reverse order. Being who we are means embracing our God-given nature and talents. To do what you can is to do all you can, not less, not more. At the time of his diagnosis, Church most certainly did not want cancer, but, as he instructs, to obsess on the bad things that befall us squeezes out a just appreciation for the good. The time we waste on wishful thinking and regret detracts from the time we might devote to being grateful for all that is ours here and now, to savor and embrace. He continues, when I was sick, I remembered I want nothing more than the caring affection of those who loved me. Wanting what I had, my prayers were answered. In each of our lives, not only will some rain fall, but fires will burn, the ground will shake, and one day life itself will be exacted in payment for the gift of life bestowed. But wanting what we have, doing what we can, and being who we are, our cup will forever be half full, not half empty. Do these things with reverence, humbled by awe, and our cup runneth over. It's unlikely that the woman in Chicago had read Church's book, but she had quickly grasped some of the same lessons. Want what you have, do what you can, be who you are. Tom Spalding's experience with Lyme disease has also taught him these lessons. He specifically mentions learning perseverance, gratitude, and awareness. Paradoxically, Tom says, Lyme has also taught him awe and admiration, even as he hates the destructive toll that Lyme is taking. Tom admires the complexity and is in awe of it as part of creation. Tom Spalding has, I think, grasped the paradox of hidden wholeness that Parker Palmer describes in his meditation. We can make use of such paradoxes when we seek to heal ourselves, not only in the case of illnesses like Lyme and cancer, but in relation to the shadow sides of our characters as well. A case study in Making Changes, which is a chapter in a book called Choice Point, it's also a movie that talks about aligning your purpose in life, will illustrate how one person has done this. Brett Moran is a former addict who served time in prison. He shares, in order to truly transform from the depths of drug addiction and a life of crime, I had to look deep within myself and face my own darkness. I had to love myself for what I was, and this helped me to turn that darkness into light. He continues, I realized I had to go through the good and the bad events in my life. I started to see the bad events in a positive way, too, realizing they were mistakes and lessons to allow me to grow, to evolve more. And obviously, I noticed the lighter and more positive events in my life, the feel-good factor, the great things. And it wasn't 2 weeks, and then I was completely cured, sitting on a mountain meditating. It was a whole journey, a long journey until this day. I'm forever learning. So let me just be clear about that quote. It didn't take him 2 weeks. It took him a long time. Today, he is a British motivational speaker and transformation guru who specializes in addiction recovery. Moran's example of facing the darkness and loving himself for what he is telling. He says that it was necessary and important to accept and love his shadow side in order to overcome his addiction. Herein lies another paradox. Don't you just love paradoxes? Buddhist teachings are rife with them. One of my favorite contemporary Buddhist teachers is Thich Nhat Hanh. Are any of you familiar with his book, Anger, Cooling the Flames? If not, you should read it. In this book, Thich Nhat Hanh teaches us to love our anger. That's right, love our anger. He explains that by loving our anger, we actually decrease its heat. Loving the anger that we are feeling cools the flames, and bit by bit, anger shrinks. With each application of love, the anger becomes less able to consume us, and eventually it has no power whatsoever. There is no longer any energy associated with the anger, and it dissipates completely. Paraphrasing Parker Palmer, by allowing the paradox of anger and love to be, the two have conspired to bring wholeness and healing to us. I'm going to end our exploration of paradox of hidden wholenesses with a teaching story from my own experience. You'll need a little background information first. I learned firewalking as a healing practice about, 16 years ago now. And since then, I have been staffing firewalk workshops in Europe and the US. My role during the week-long trainings at the initiation level is as the fire tender. This means that I lead the participants in building and lighting the fire while the fire is burning. I watch over it and work with it to create a beautiful bed of hot coals. The energy of my interactions with the fire contribute to the experience people have later. So I tend and love the fire with gentle care. Then during the fire walk, I assist the workshop leader with raking the fire preparatory to people walking across the hot coals. At the end of the fire walk, it's my job to close up the fire and do that with the same kind of reverence and respect for the fire as our teacher and healer. So on this one particular occasion, we had finished the fire walk, and the participants had already gone on their way up to the lodge, which was up a hill, and I was doing my job of closing up the fire, raking the coals back together, closing it for the end of what we had been doing. And I did that. I closed up the fire, I raked it all together. I may have even raked it into the shape of a heart or something like that. We get a little creative. And so I did that. I set the tools where they needed to be, and I headed down this slope and then started walking up the hill along this road to the lodge where we would have dessert. We always have dessert afterwards. It's a very sweet ending. So I'm walking along, and I see some figure up ahead of me on the road. And I call out, "Walking up alone in the dark?" And then I realized it was my own shadow. So what could be better than meeting your shadow on a dark road with joy?